This is an interview with Margaret Tupper on the 27th of August, 1992, at 10 past 11 in the morning. And it's about her recollections of Albury and Albury Church in particular, and her connections with it. Margaret, I think the first thing to say is that Tupper is a very famous name in Albury's history.
It's very well known in this neighbourhood, anyway.
Now, your connection with it is by marriage.
Yes.
So tell me the story of the Tupper history, as it were, including yourself.
Starting with old Martin Tupper, my husband's grandfather. Well, he married into the Davis family, who owned Albury House. So he eventually took over the house, bought it, I think. And they produced... He married a Miss Davis, and they produced a number of children. And my husband's father was one of the youngest. And as he was 64 when my husband was born, there's a generation gap.
Gosh, that was a good age, wasn't it? Yes. So it was Martin Tupper the senior, as it were.
Yes.
And then Martin Tupper...
The grandson.
The grandson. Now, the grandson was is the famous...
No, the grandfather is the famous one. And you see, he... As I say, he had a number of children, and my husband's father was one of the youngest. So he is, I think he's about, well, heaven knows how old he would be, because I think it was 2 years ago my son laid a wreath for the History Society on his grave in the Albury Churchyard, and that was commemorating the centenary of his death, so you can tell how long ago it is.
Now, could you explain the historical significance of Martin Tupper Sr. To Albury and the creation of the new church and his connection with that?
He was a tremendous Protestant, and there were Huguenot connections. And when he was abroad, he took his large family on a European tour. And he heard about the closure of the old church while he was abroad, and apparently came home, tearing home, wrote to the Archbishop, wrote to the Bishop of Winchester, wrote to MPs, made a terrific fuss, and said that it was quite out of order to close the old church. And the story goes, I don't know whether it's authentic, but I think it is, that because of the fuss he made, the new church was built, but it was agreed that there should be at least four services every year held in the old church, which still pertains to today. That still happens.
Mm-hmm. And then later on, it was his son, your husband, I believe, who was the rector here.
His grandson was a curate in his youth.
Right. Now, that was your husband.
Yes.
And that was from 1937 to 1940.
That's right.
So, now, had your husband lived continuously in the village, or had the family moved away, as it were?
Old Martin Tupper, I think, had written some very good works. He's out of fashion now, but so are a lot of other Victorian poets and philosophers. But he was not worldly wise. He went to America, where he became very well known indeed. Sold an enormous number of his books there. But he made a very unwise investment in gold or some such silly thing and lost all the money that he'd made. With the result, they had to sell Albury House, and they moved to Cintra Park in south London, near the Crystal Palace. And that's where my husband was born. Now, his father was William, and he had very bad eyesight and was unable to really hold down any work at all. So they more or less had to live on what was left of the Tupper fortune. They then moved to another house in Upper Norwood, which is where my husband lived when I knew him. But his mother was very, very still interested in Albury and used to visit quite a lot. My husband was brought up on Albury and old Martin Tupper and all the family saga.
Yes. And then later on, came back here to live and work.
It was very strange because he'd had an enormous parish in London where he was a curate at first, in New Cross, St. James Hatcham, very big church there, 28,000 people in the parish.
Gosh.
And after 4 years of it, he was getting thinner and thinner. And that was when I married him, after he'd been there 2 years. And my mother was getting very worried about us both, because it wasn't exactly a salubrious neighbourhood. And she could see that he was very unwell. And she cut out this thing out of the Church Times, asking for anybody to apply it as a curacy for a curacy in Albury. And she sent this cutting to us, and he applied, and of course he got the job.
How wonderful. I mean, he really had the right qualifications for it, didn't he?
Well, he did, in a way.
Now, you had not known Aubrey. You were from London originally.
No, I was from Essex.
From Essex. Mm.
No, I met him through mutual friends. He was at Cambridge at the time. And my sister was friendly with somebody he knew in Cambridge. Yes. And that's how we met, when I was 15. Yes, so I was taken along to this tennis party as the little sister and met my future husband there.
So here you were in 1937, and did he jump at the opportunity to come back to the family home, as it were?
He had very mixed feelings about it. At that time, he'd never lived in the country, although Upper Norwood was quite countrified when he was born and in his youth. But having lived and worked in this very poor, terribly poor parish, he came from a true blue conservative family, but I'm afraid his eyes were open to a lot of things he'd never realised existed. And I think some of his ideas probably didn't go down very well with the elders of Albury, but he was very popular with the younger members.
How do you mean his ideas didn't go down well?
Well, I can remember him once saying in a sermon that he couldn't swear that if he had a hungry family and hadn't any money, that he would not take a pint of milk off a doorstep.
Yes.
Well, I think when you'd seen 10 people living in one room, it sort of did open your eyes to the differences in the world.
Yes, indeed. Because even in those days, 1930, between the wars, Albury was a prosperous place, presumably.
Very prosperous. And the social echelons were very well marked.
Yes.
Somebody said to me the other day that Albury still has these social distinctions. But I said, you don't know what it was like then. It was really a great eye-opener to me.
Yes. How interesting. And then he found that there was this contradiction between his own previous parish
much.
And then coming down here.
Very much.
And you say that you did too. How did you find...
Well, I'd been brought up in a small market town. And I loved the country, and I was of the country. And the shock was going to London and seeing all. But I think for a very young bride, so to speak, these very formal dinner parties, and one of the things I do remember, which may be of slight interest, at matins one morning, the first time I went to church in the morning, I stood up to go out of the church, because probably I had some lunch to cook or something, and I thought I'd get out quickly at the back. Somebody pulled me down again. We all had to sit until the Duchess and her entourage had come down the aisle. And that was something that I'd never encountered, because in Epping, you know, there were so-called county folk who all sort of mingled, and we didn't have that dreadful...
Mm. Now, this is the Duke and Duchess of Northumberland.
Well, it was the Duchess then. I think she was a widow then.
And I was hearing that they had their own pew. And
oh, absolutely.
And it was, you know, everyone waited till they arrived.
Yeah, and everyone waited till they'd gone. We had to sit while they walked down the aisle.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did your husband, as the rector...
The curate.
The curate. Mm-hmm. How did he manage to to deal with this tremendous range in sort of social...
Well, I think he'd been brought up in that sort of way by his mother. Mm. As I say, she was a true blue Tory.
So he had an understanding of what it was to be a Duchess.
Well, he had a slight understanding, more than I had. But it was the formality of it, all the calling and the cards that had to be turned up at the corner and things you could do and couldn't do. It was... That was a great shock to me.
Mm. Now, how is it that you are now living in Albury? What happened after 1940?
He was rector of Stedham near Midhurst, where we had 9 very happy years. He did other things in between, but that was before he came here. And when his mother died in 1955, he decided that he wanted to travel. Most of his family had been in the Navy or had travelled in some way. And a member of the congregation down there had some sort of connection with the Polytechnic in London. And she said, they do send chaplains out to their centres in Switzerland and so on. Why don't you apply for a chaplaincy for a holiday? Well, he did, and off he went. The dear Bishop of Chichester, Bishop Bell, said, do you good, my boy, you know, it'll broaden your mind. Off you go, as long as you arrange things for the parish. And he said, well, my wife will be there, and I'll get locums. And he got the travel bug, you see. And there was a point where the manager of the centre was sent for to come home for some reason, and my husband ran the centre. And in the winter, he was to be in the Polytechnic in London, teaching. And in the summer, he was to go out there. Well, meanwhile, I had a large dancing connection down in between Hazelmere and Midhurst, Petworth and so on.
You were teaching?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Various, you know, privately. I had my own classes. And he had to get to London when he was in England. And I still wanted to be in that area. And we applied to Guildford travel estate agents. And we were both sent by different agents this place. We decided that Guildford was halfway between. It was a good place to be.
Like so many people do now.
Mm. Mm. And my mother came down when my father died. So she was there. So I didn't want to be too far from her. And this was a dreadful place. I mean, this was all stable, a whole lot of it. Mm-hmm. Cobbled floor. And how we bought it, I don't know, but we did. Because we'd known Eric Savage, who had bought it after it was derequisitioned by the council after the war. And here we came. That's how we got back here.
So you stayed in Albury?
Yes, we stayed in Albury. And it was very strange at first, coming back, but gradually got integrated again. Mm. All the people I knew then were lads and lasses, and we were all much older. It was very odd.
Let me ask you one or two sort of impression, little sort of snapshots now, if I may. First of all, one of the things that surprises me about the new church, and I don't know whether it's still called the new church, is it's a brick building. It's
a copy of a French church, isn't it? Very ugly.
Now, can you remember, was that your first impression when you saw it?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it struck me as being out of place. I thought the interior was very beautiful. I liked the openness and the organ was marvellous. We had a very good organist. The music was good.
So the first impression was striking.
I don't remember disliking the outside. I know a lot of people did, but because it was very much cleaner then, it was very bright. But I thought the interior was very... I liked the wide east end.
In those days, was the order of the services very much as they are now?
Well, it was the I suppose one would say, the authorised version.
I noticed you mentioned matins, which was interesting, because yes. That's quite a sort of an older, formal sort
well,
of service, wasn't it?
Well, I think there used to be an 8 o'clock service, a matins, children's service, which my husband took, and evensong each week. Mm-hmm. In those days, there was a rector and a curate, and three churches which had services every Sunday, so they were both pretty busy.
And who was the rector when he was there?
Philip Gray.
I have happy recollections as a choir boy myself, and later a bell ringer in the church in my hometown, of services, but most of all of some of the preachers who were larger than life figures.
Yes.
Was Philip Gray one of these passionate orators, or was your husband?
My husband was a natural preacher, which he'd inherited, I suppose, from his grandfather, the gift of words. He was a very excellent preacher, very sincere, had a lovely speaking voice. I think that's quite an unbiased opinion. He was also diocesan youth leader when he was here, so he was very busy. He started a youth club, which was successful, in Albury. And I did a nativity play. That was about my contribution, I think.
You produced this. Tell me a tiny bit about that.
Oh, well, some of the people, you'd be surprised to learn, are still in the village. Mary Fuller took part in it as a child, who lives now just past the church. Reg Howick, of course, was a leading light in the youth club. And there are still some people here who took part in those things.
And still remember your
oh yes,
your production?
They do. It amuses me sometimes, things that people do remember. Wynne Brown will tell you some of the things. Mm. And Margaret Woods, who was Margaret Hughes in those days, she was another one.
Tell me a tiny bit more about your husband's sermons and so on. He sounds a very interesting and quite a passionate person
very,
about what he believed in.
Very.
How did he go about planning his sermons? Did he sit down and shut himself away?
Well, this was always a point of argument, because he said he was mentally lazy about writing sermons. He didn't preach from a written word. I mean, he wrote notes, but he could never do it until the last moment, till he was driven, which meant that we could never accept an invitation to dinner on a Saturday night, because he was in his study till midnight or so, writing his sermon. Then had to get up very early the next morning in London to take a 7 o'clock service in a church 2 miles away. So he did write them. They were painfully produced, but the effect was very good.
And did he give sermons here as the curate?
Yes, very much so.
What did he choose as his themes? Did he ask you for an idea ever?
No, he didn't. He had a very fertile mind, very clearly expressed.
I always think that the quality of the speaker is so important in the pulpit. And you say that he had a beautiful voice.
He did have a lovely speaking voice. I think anyone would tell you that. Mm. But he was so sincere. There were no histrionics or anything like that. I do remember one thing, and who it was shall be anonymous. She's not alive now, but some of her relatives are. Members of the Catholic Apostolic Church would come to us in August when their church was closed. And they were rather diehard in some ways. Very friendly family that the Tuppers had known in the olden days, forebears. And very, very pleasant lady said to me when we came out of church, "I should so like it if your husband would read someone else's sermons during August."
Do you think people actually came to his sermons to enjoy the quality of not only what he had to say, but his own performance?
No, I don't think so. I think they would have come to church anyway.
Anyway,
it was a regular
But
he did have people who appreciated him, both here and certainly in Stedham, where he was rector. In fact, his ashes are interred there. We were very happy there.
Marvellous testimonial. I'm fascinated also by your descriptions of the importance and significance of the Duchess in particular of Northumberland, and all the I hesitate to say bowing and scraping, but the general sort of recognition of their significance that went on. What did the people of Albury themselves feel about their powerful landlords, as it were?
Well, in those days, you see, there were so many old families who'd been here for generations. And I think they were just used to it. The amusing thing was, and I'm sure this happens everywhere, but it is quite significant, I think, before the war. The landlord, the lord of the manor, or the lady of the manor, would hold parties at Christmas. You'd have the gentry in one party, and the workers, it's another party, the tenants and so on, tenant farmers and whatnot. Now, we were invited to both, which I thought was rather funny.
Yes.
They weren't quite sure what we were.
Yes. Well, I suppose that's rather nice, isn't it? I mean, the church does straddle the whole community.
That did amuse both of us very much.
So they were people were at once proud of their powerful companions in church, but at the same time rather sort of awestruck as well.
I suppose some of the younger people were, but I don't think the older people were awestruck. I think they took it for granted that that was the way of life.
The one or two rather nice little incidents that I've sort of gleaned along the way, one of them was that in 1938, I believe, the new windows were consecrated at the in the chancel, is that right?
For the Duchess, in the Northumberland Chapel.
I think in the Northumberland Chapel.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
I don't. I can't think why I don't. Because we were here. But I do remember that the cathedral was blessed at that time. And my husband was the Archbishop's chaplain. A very windy day, and I think there was a thunderstorm at the time, and they were standing right up at the top there, because it was all stopped during the war, but that was when it was actually consecrated.
Yes. Any other little tiny sort of anecdotes that come back to you about the church here in particular? Little incidents of amusing occasions?
Well, I can tell you one very amusing one, which I quoted to Wynne Brown yesterday. She was talking about amusing incidents, and I said, I've never forgotten that there was a very strong mother's union here at the time, and I, just married, no children, went to a service. The organist was a good-looking young man, unmarried, and the rest of the congregation, I think, were middle-aged, elderly, and Mr. Gray, in his sermon, said, now we mothers know what it's like. And the organist and I caught one another's eye. That was funny.
Yes.
Like Mrs. Thatcher saying, we are a grandmother.
It's curious, and humour in church in particular, where we are supposed to be solemn, is all that much more poignant, isn't it?
Oh, yes, yes. Mm.
Do you think the church now is as lively as it was? I mean, I hear that there's no longer a choir there now.
That's very sad. There used to be, of course, in my husband's day, quite a big choir of the boys of the village all took part. Some of them, I'm afraid, were killed in the war. And it's when we came back here, our younger son became a chorister at the cathedral. We used to go up there to the services. But one thing happened when we'd been here a few months. Luckily, my husband wasn't in. Somebody came, started saying that the rector, I don't think it was Mr. Gray then, it was another rector, refused to baptise her daughter's child because they didn't attend church. And would my husband do it? So we said, from now on, we'll have absolutely nothing whatever to do with the church, because it's a terrible thing, I think, to come back to a parish. So our other boy went into Shear Choir, so we sometimes went to Shear, sometimes to the cathedral. And then my husband was away so much travelling that until I stopped doing so much dancing, teaching, we didn't have much to do with the church. But since Dudley Gummer has been here, I'm glad to say, he visited my husband several times before he died. Just got to know him. And he's visited me since I had the attack. And he's a very, very pleasant man, I think, doing his utmost to pull it together again. I think it did go through a very sticky patch. But I think Mr. and Mrs. Gummer are pulling it together wonderfully.
No, I'm sure he'd be delighted to hear you say that. I'm going to have a little chat with him anyway about, because he also has come from London, or Luton.
Luton, I believe. He said it was very, absolutely different.
Yeah, I must ask him about that. It'll be most intriguing.
But only one personal thing I can tell you about my connection with the church was, to my great amazement and delight, he asked me if I would produce a dance for Harvest Festival. Did he tell you last year? And I had two very talented children I was coaching. One of them is attached to the Royal Academy of Dancing. And I did a choreography to the John Rutter, All Things Bright and Beautiful. And he was very impressed with it. And Jane was also very impressed. And my son said, "Mum, I didn't know what you've been doing all these years." But I think he's got these good ideas about broadening the religious life of the church.
Yes. So just to clarify, last of all, when you came back here to hear, your husband was in the church still, but he was connected to the cathedral, was he?
No, he was doing his travelling job. He was with Polytechnic.
Oh, yes, you told me, yes.
And then he went into educational travel after that.
Yes.
Because his great theme was the sort of, if people didn't understand one another, nations lived in their own little boxes, there'd never be peace in the world. So he had this great idea that if the children travelled, and in those days, of course, in the 50s, there was not so much travelling for children. And he loved that.
Mm.
That's what he did. He went on working till he was 70, part-time.
That's marvellous, Margaret. Thank you very much indeed.
Well, I don't know whether any of that...
Oh, yes, it's absolutely marvellous, I can tell you.